I'm John Kroll. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about domestic violence, the damage it does to too many lives, and what we can do about it. My guests are three people who have devoted themselves to easing the pain of those who hurt in the home and finding ways to reduce the incidence of domestic violence. Kelly McBride, Lindsay Hill-Staywick, and Chris Hanberg of the Domestic Violence Network. Please join this important conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we're going to talk today about domestic violence and ways we can stop it before it even starts. We're going to talk with some folks who work tirelessly on this issue. They are all from Indiana's Domestic Violence Network. They are Kelly McBride, who is the executive director, Lindsay Hill-Staywick, who is youth program manager, and Chris Hanberg, who is director of programs and research. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here, and I also should say this is an important conversation, and we would like to invite our listeners to take part in it. To do that, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I like to start these conversations first, you know, in part because domestic violence, like so many other of the problems that really afflict us, are one of those things people, at least initially, are not entirely comfortable talking about. Many of them prefer to ignore it or wish that it did not exist. I think it is important always to start this conversation by pointing out just how large a problem it is. So, Kelly, I'm going to start with you. I mean, what are the numbers on domestic violence? And I'll let you pick wherever you can say in this nation, in this state, in this community. Give me an idea of just how many people deal with this.
Well, nationally, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 7 men will be a victim of domestic violence in their lifetime. So it's a very huge problem that our community deals with.
And I presume it's like a lot of these other problems that with rape and sexual abuse and all of that sort of stuff that people don't like to talk about and would prefer to wish away. If anything, those numbers are low. Right.
I would say they are low. I think that's one of the most underreported crimes. A lot of people, I think, don't know that they're in a domestic violence relationship. When you think of domestic violence, you oftentimes think of the physical abuse, but it's so much more complex than that. You have emotional abuse. You have the sexual assault, which you brought up. There's financial abuse. So there's different types of domestic abuse that occur. And I don't think a lot of people realize that they might even be in that relationship.
How many of these instances, if it's 1 in 3, we'll take those numbers, even though I tend to agree with you. I think they are low. But we'll start with, how many of those are actually reported, Chris?
I believe, I don't have the exact number, but I know that it's, I think, somewhere between 25 and 30% are reported, leaving 75% unreported. An important number that I always go back to is the Avon Foundation released a study in 2013 that said that 53% of Americans knew someone who had experienced abuse. Mm-hmm. And so that's half of all people in your work, in your school, in your church, your faith community. When every time you go to the grocery store, half of all people know someone who's experienced domestic violence.
I'm going to start. I'll take answer from any one of the three of you here. We probably ought to define, because Kelly ticked off, you know, it can be actual physical violence, it can be sexual abuse, it can be financial abuse. How do we define domestic abuse? What are the parameters of it so that people know what the signals or signs are? Kelly, everyone seems to be looking in your direction.
Well, everybody could answer this question, but domestic violence is defined as power and control. Mm-hmm. So it's one partner exerting that power and control over the other. So when it starts off as the emotional abuse, that's what works for them to make to keep their partner in line, if you will, of what they the behavior that they want to have from that partner. And then it escalates to physical violence when those other tactics aren't working for them. And it becomes very dangerous when one partner is leaving the relationship, the victim is leaving the relationship because the other partner feels like they've lost all power and control and they really want that back. And so they're going to, you're going to see more stalking and more of the physical behavior. And that's when homicide, the chance for homicide escalates to 75%. So it's about power and control ultimately.
And we ought to make, you used a key word there, partner, about when it comes to power and control. If I tell my 8-year-old child, and in this I'm exerting some control over the child, no, you have to go to bed now because we have school tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning. That's not domestic abuse. That is parenting. It is when that power or control is over someone who is a partner or a peer, and it sounds like there is some desire to curtail or limit the options the other person has. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Go ahead. Jump on in.
Well, yeah, I wanted to point out, because it's really important, a lot of times when people think of domestic abuse, they only think of adults. And as the youth program manager, I just want to throw it out there that 1 in 3 teenagers, they experience some form of abuse in their lifetime, whether that's emotional, verbal, through social media, which is huge. We also rank 2nd highest in the nation for sexual assault among 9 to 12th grade girls. So it's a problem that's plaguing our schools, too.
Yeah, we've done shows on Indiana's rather dubious history in terms of teen sexual assaults and teen sex crimes. In terms of, Lindsay, the forms of domestic abuse or domestic violence plaguing young people, what are the most common ones and the things we should look for?
I would say social media is a great outlet. Not great in that sense, but an outlet where a common outlet where young people are abused, harassed, stalked, intimidated, threatened. Mm-hmm. And also the emotional abuse. Also, a lot of people or young people, when I go into schools, we talk about consent. They don't know what consent means, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to moving through a relationship and making decisions about where they want to go next in the relationship.
Go ahead. Yeah, Chris.
And if I may, about the social media and technology, that's one of the newer forms of abuse that we're seeing. It's not only the harassment and things, but it's also stalking, looking at someone's phone and asking them who's on their friends list, who's been liking their statuses, this jealous, accusatory control of their technology, whether that's looking at their cell phones, enabling certain spyware to see what they've been up to online. So that's one of the things that the trends that we're seeing now.
Is it particularly with young people, or is it more?
It's across the spectrum. I think that adults are using those things. You know, when you come home, if you're in an abusive relationship and you come home and your partner demands to see your phone to see who you've been texting, who you've been talking to, and sometimes even where you've been through the use of technology. So,
if you are just joining us, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we're talking about really domestic violence, domestic abuse here on No Limits today. If you'd like to join the conversation, perhaps share your story or ask a question, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So often with these conversations, the focus seems to shift to the person who has to endure the abuse rather than, and I don't even want to use that, they call it blaming the victim. I don't, even using a term like victim bothers me a little bit there because I think it demeans and dehumanizes another human being. That said, I don't necessarily have a good substitute for the word right now. Survivor, I suppose, would work. But I want to focus more on what we know about what prompts people to abuse. Let's focus on the people who are doing the harm here. Is there research on that? Chris, you're nodding your head, so I'm assuming...
Well, this is something that has fascinated me for a long time, and we're relatively new in the movement. I mean, we've been around, you know, since the 70s and 80s, and right now we're doing a lot of research on how to prevent violence and what are those protective and risk factors to keep someone from committing abuse and perpetrating abuse and experiencing it. I think that abusing someone in a relationship is a learned behavior.
Mm-hmm.
They learn it either through experiences they had as a child, through culture, or even a confluence of all of those.
So it's a learned behavior. How do we break the cycle? And I'll take that from it. Well, actually, I'd like to hear all of your thoughts on that. And I realize it is a lot of the research on this is relatively new, so there isn't a hard and fast. We're still in that awkward stage between figuring this stuff out as an art and eventually, we hope, becomes a science with established rules. Go ahead, Lindsay.
I believe that the community, the domestic violence community, believes that early education is really important. So starting the conversation early with the young people in our life about how to be kind, how to be empathetic, how to be compassionate towards others, talking about consent, talking about relationships, friendships, how to have a healthy one. One thing that a student at Crispus Attucks told a news outlet when they came to interview her one day was that the adults in my life just don't talk to me about it, and I want to talk about it. I want to be able to share these experiences with the people that I trust, and I don't want to feel ashamed to bring it up. So as easy as it may sound, starting the conversation, I think, will be a big help.
So how do you, and I do want to hear your thoughts too, but this is important because you've raised this a couple of times. How do you encourage people to have a conversation about what consent means?
Well, I work with a lot of young people about it.
Yeah.
So we talk about consent. I have this graphic that has the four components of consent. We read everyone out loud. I answer questions. We discuss each component together. We may even watch a video that further explains it. And we spend 45 to 50 minutes talking about consent.
And what are the four components of consent?
Oh, goodness. That it's active.
Okay.
It's based on equal power. It's a choice and it's a process.
Okay. So active, that bears repeating. Active. Equal power.
It's based on equal power.
It's a choice.
It's a choice, and it's a process.
And it's a process.
That it requires ongoing conversations.
Okay. How do we break the cycle from your perspective, Chris? And we'll assume that you're gonna agree with
everything
Lindsay
that she just said.
Okay, but if you have additional thoughts.
I think that as a community, we have to really shame those that perpetrate violence. And keep them, hold them accountable. If you hear someone making a gender-based violence joke, to hold them accountable and not tolerate it, to teach our children that we respect both genders equally and we respect our intimate partners. And I think modeling healthy relationships in our communities is one of the most powerful ways to prevent violence.
Isn't holding that issue, though, of holding the perpetrator accountable is trickier than it sounds, though, because often, you know, like if the person loses a job and the income goes away, I know that that can make the situation in the home even worse.
I think let me give you an example.
Yeah, please.
If you see someone who is talking down to, humiliating, degrading their partner in public, you know, you're at a community event, you're in a house of worship, and you see that happening, to step in, to be an active bystander, and to pull them aside and say, what you're doing is not acceptable in this community. We won't tolerate that. We treat people with respect. And that's very hard to do, and I'll give you that. But to step up when you see even small incidents, which could lead to bigger incidents later.
Well, and again, I get all of this, and I'm not trying to be difficult.
Oh, no, it's fine.
I guess I have some experience. I did try once to confront someone that mm-hmm. I thought was behaving inappropriately to a spouse and ended up getting chewed out by the spouse. Mm-hmm. Said, this is none of your business. How do you, and I realize this is a complicated thing. Sure. We're approaching a break. So why don't we pick that back up on the other side, because I don't want to force you to answer that question in about 4 seconds.
You got it.
Okay, we will do that. We are talking about domestic violence here on No Limits because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We're going to talk about what we're doing as a community to combat domestic violence. My guests are all from Indiana's Domestic Violence Network. They are Kelly McBride, who is the executive director, Lindsay Hill-Staywick, who is the youth program manager, and Chris Hanberg, who is director of programs and research. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We're talking with three members of Indiana's Domestic Violence Network about ways that we can combat domestic violence here in the state and in this community. They are Kelly McBride, who is the executive director, Lindsay Hill-Staywick, who is the youth program manager, and Chris Hanberg, who is director of programs and research. Before we went to the break, Chris, we were talking about how we should attempt to intervene perhaps in situations where we think one partner might be abusing another in public, to send a signal that we don't tolerate this community. I related an experience where I tried to do that and ended up getting, chewed out by the spouse that I thought I was intervening on behalf of, who told me just to butt out, that it was none of my business. And I raised it because I can't believe that I'm the only person who's ever had that kind of experience. Over the break, you were explaining to me what the dynamic is there. So I'd like to pick that up if we could.
Sure. From my perspective, I think that the person who's experiencing the violence would defend the person who is abusing them because they don't have any other choice. If they choose to speak out, then when they get home, they could experience even more and greater violence than what's going on in public. Obviously, we want people to be safe, and it's a very complicated dynamic. So,
well, and Kelly, I want to, continuing on this theme, if you are in a position where you suspect someone is enduring domestic abuse, could be violence, could be some other form, rather than perhaps confronting the perpetrator, what's a way you could say to the person who's enduring the abuse, I'd be willing to help you.
Absolutely. That's how you would start the conversation, that you're concerned that you are seeing these warning signs and you're very concerned for their safety and that you're there for them if they choose to take you up on it. And leave that door open then. Don't force them to talk about it if they don't want to. Don't tell them to leave because that could be very dangerous for them. But check in with them and see how they're doing. And it could take months or years before they decide to leave that relationship. So as frustrating as it can be to watch one of your loved ones go through a domestic violence relationship, if you close that door on them and say, enough, you should just walk away, mm-hmm. you should just leave, you're just isolating them even more.
And making it easier for them to become a target of that kind of behavior. If you're just joining us, we're talking about domestic violence here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Richard has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you guys?
We are doing well. What's on your mind?
I wanted to sort of just offer up a suggestion and a scenario because of the way that I sort of deal with domestic violence in my job. I'm a meter reader. And so I sort of invade people's, you know, 5,000 people's homes a month, reading their electric meter. Mm-hmm. And I've seen, you know, especially out here in my country, Indiana, you know, some males getting a little heated with women. And what I try to do, because I, you know, I understand, you know, like it's difficult to butt in, and, you know, I'm a skinny guy especially, so, and it's a guy, and, you know, if I confront another male, he's probably going to want to try to beat me up. Or, you know, the situation where the woman would sort of say, like, you know, get out of here, like, this isn't your problem. I at least always try to hang around and watch them, you know, and I know that's sort of an advantage I have because that's my job, is to creep through people's yards. But I at least always tried to make sure, like, when it's all done or, like, things are settled, if, like, the man left or if the woman's alone, I'll just go up and ask, like, are you okay? Is everything fine? Just at least, you know, just so they know that, you know, the creepy guy that walks around the neighborhood is, you know, is watching and kind of wants to make sure everything's okay. So I just wanted to offer up that sort of scenario for people that, like, because I get it, and I'm always scared to walk up and kind of say, hey, and be an active bystander and things like that.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing your insights, Richard.
Yeah, thank you.
Certainly. So, okay, so I'll tell you what, we'll throw that one to Chris.
I think that seems like a very good strategy. I also want to throw in there the caveat that if there's a really violent incident going on,
call
911. Yeah. These are sort of things we're talking about that's more verbal abuse, more emotional abuse. And particularly, I think there is power in not letting especially children hear gender-based jokes where women are degraded and abusing is considered something to laugh about. I've worked in domestic violence for 11 years. It's no laughing matter. It's it's not something that we should be joking about either in public or private. So I really think there's power in being an active bystander to stop even those gender-based jokes.
And because I think that's where it starts, you know, by not allowing that locker room talk, if you will, or, you know, the uncle at Thanksgiving to make the offhanded comments, and by not laughing at them. That's where it really all begins.
But is there a danger in assuming that it is all gender based? I mean, obviously, we are in a state now, in a country, which same sex marriages and partnerships, and I've looked at the numbers. I know that unfortunately, domestic violence, domestic abuse, you know, straight couples do not have a monopoly on that sort of behavior. So, Chris.
Yeah, actually, we've done a lot of work in the last year with the local LGBTQ community. We have great partnerships with Indy Pride and with Open for Service. And the LGBTQ+ community experiences intimate partner violence at higher rates, sometimes 2 to 3 times higher than their heterosexual cisgender counterparts. And so the gender-based jokes absolutely is part of it, but anything that sort of degrades partners.
Another human being. Again, we are talking about domestic violence here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Julie, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I'd like to offer up 2 points of discussion. First of all, children involved in situations where there's domestic violence and aspects of domestic violence other than physical abuse, as in emotional, psychological, verbal abuse, and the fact that a lot of laws have not caught up with that aspect of domestic violence, and children who, whether or not they are in touch with the abusive partner or parent, as it may be, have any options other than being required to spend time with that parent if you can't prove anything other than physical abuse.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'm going to throw that one your way, Lindsay.
Okay. I used to work for the Department of Child Services, so I assessed many homes where domestic violence was present. You're right, it's hard to, it's sometimes hard to determine if something happened, if the children don't disclose or talk about it. DCS is there to help. They may have a bad name in our community, but they do a lot of good for the children in our community. They help create safety plans for the family. They help provide resources and referrals and hook them up with people who can help. As far as laws go, I'm not sure that there's anything in place as far as family custody court goes, depending on if there's a no-contact order or protective order in place. Sometimes that does happen where the children are also on the no-contact order or protective order, depending if it happened in front of them or not.
Lindsay, I'm going to stay with you for a minute because I think this is important, particularly since what we're learning is that this is learned behavior often. So let's talk first about what the psychological developmental impact is on children who experience domestic violence or abuse. What does it do to them? And I'll give you a heads up. The second part of that question is, what's it like if they grow up for them, even if they are not the focus of that, if they just grow up in an environment where, you know, one partner is abusing the other, what the impact is there?
There's a lot of research out there, and something that is a hot topic right now, and that's trauma and how it affects your brain. So it definitely rewires your brain. It kind of slows down development as you grow older. So if you experience this at a young age, your brain is developing slower. And then Chris, do you have any?
Chris, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that you either emulate the abuse that you've seen, or you work really hard to not. And so it's sort of, it's every individual is different. But research shows that you are, I believe it is, 1,000 times more likely to perpetrate abuse if you saw severe abuse in your home as a child.
You're also more likely to have mental health issues, substance abuse. I mean, as Lindsay said, it rewires your brain, and research is showing that that's what it can lead to.
Do we have any idea? I mean, right now in this culture, one of the reasons that I think this subject is so hard to address, even get to the, you know, what we say are really accurate numbers about how often it occurs, because we think that 1 in 3 and 1 in 7 number, those two numbers are probably lower than the actual incidents, and I see you're all nodding your head because you have experience with it. Do we have any idea where, because, you know, presumption always has been that, at least when I was raised and all of that, and most, we would at least give lip service that it was very wrong for a man to hit a woman, period. And yet, it occurs all. So, you know, at least at some surface level, culturally, we are saying, no, this cannot happen. On another, but below that surface, we're saying, yeah, it does. And
but so because what? We make excuses for people, you know, they lost their job, they got drunk, it's hot outside, you know, whatever the excuse is, because the truth is, someone who perpetrates violence is not just someone who is violent. They are also a person who has a relationship with his family that he's part of, if, you know, assuming that it's a male abuser. You know, the couple didn't start off in an abusive relationship. They had first dates. They had romantic feelings and times, just like every other relationship. And it's only over the course of time does a relationship turn from romantic to violent. And so this person is a whole person, even though they're perpetrating violence and they're doing these really, really terrible things. And so as a community, we don't want to believe that someone can be that awful. So we try to find an excuse for the violence that they're perpetrating. And I think that's completely wrong. There is no excuse. And it's harder for At least that's my opinion.
Well, that's where victim blaming comes in.
Right. Yeah. What did she do to...
to deserve that.
Or why doesn't she leave?
Yeah, or why doesn't he leave?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And all of that. So, but that dissonance then is a way to avoid confronting the subject, Kelly?
Yes. And also to mirror off of that too, so many times when it does happen, especially in the past, it was, well, that's a family matter. We're not going to talk about that in the community. That stays behind closed doors. So you can talk about, well, we don't hit girls or we don't hit. But then on the counter of that too, you know, growing up, if a boy hit you on the playground, oh, that's because he likes you. So what kind of mixed messages and signals is that giving to kids? You
I was
know,
say, that was never a courtship ritual of mine, but that's you know, I always thought dinner and flowers worked more effectively.
Most definitely. Yeah.
So, has this problem? Do we get some sense? Has it gotten better or worse over time? Lindsay's rolling her eyes towards the ceiling, and Chris, go ahead, step in.
You know, I think that. I don't want to look at it in terms of gotten better or worse. I think that we are addressing it as a community finally. And so we can't really measure whether or not it's bad or worse because we're still uncovering the layers of the problem, the cause of the problem, how to prevent the problem. But I will say that we have a lot of really good community resources. We have schools that Lindsay goes into that are willing to teach about, let Lindsay teach about healthy relationships. We do a lot of work with employers where HR managers will let us talk to them about how to address it if someone in your company is experiencing domestic violence and how you can support them as an employer. So I think that the community is willing and ready to talk about it in a way that I don't think historically has ever been the case.
Mm-hmm. Gotten a question from a caller who didn't want to go on the air, who says, if you've given sexual consent previously, do you have the right to take it back?
Yes.
Of course.
yes.
That
it's
one.
Always a choice. It's always a choice.
So saying yes at some point does not mean you are saying yes perpetually.
Correct.
I want to get into a thornier area, and I've talked with prosecutors about this over the years, and I should say in the interest of full disclosure, when I was a newspaper reporter, I did series on domestic violence, and I did series on rape, exploring the ramifications. So some of the questions are informed by that reporting here. But I remember one female prosecutor talking about a case that was incredibly frustrating to her because the woman who had been raped had given consent to sex. But, you know, as the prosecutor said, she didn't give consent to be mauled and beat up during the sex. And the law has a very difficult time processing, at least as it's currently written. Are enough protections in place right now for people who experience abuse? Kelly, I'm going to start with you, but we may run out of time, but I'm going to come back to all of you after the break.
So are there enough laws in place to
protect? Well, or is our understanding of abuse, picking up on one of the caller's points, is the law sophisticated enough in its understanding of what abuse is, what the forms of abuse might be?
I think it's getting better. Most definitely, but we still have a lot of work to do when it comes to policies and laws and domestic violence and sexual assault.
And especially with young people, you know, just, I don't know, 10 years ago, if they weren't in an intimate relationship, living together, married, the police didn't take it as seriously as they would otherwise. Mm-hmm. We have come a long way in that fact. We work with IMPD all the time to train them and to inform them about domestic violence. But young people, especially with protective orders, no contact orders, I think there could be more done for them.
Yeah, it wasn't until I think it was this year that the domestic battery charge changed, and I'm going to speak as intelligently as I can about this, that it used to be between a male and female married couple, and now it includes any household member. So that's couples where they're living together. The person who is abusing can be charged with domestic battery. From my perspective, I think that we've improved. We still have some places to go. So.
We are talking about domestic violence because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. on No Limits. My guests are all from Indiana's Domestic Violence Network, Executive Director Kelly McBride, Youth Program Manager Lindsay Hall-Staywick, and Director of Programs and Research Chris Handberg. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about domestic violence because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. My guests are all from Indiana's Domestic Violence Network, Kelly McBride, who's the executive director, Lindsay Hall-Staywick, who is the youth program manager, and Chris Handberg, who is director of programs and research. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, track us down on Twitter at WFYI, and do what a listener named Gary has done, and reach out to us via Facebook. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Gary writes, I am confused about legalism in Western society. If legalism in Chinese philosophy is controlling and punishing, is the Western culture proliferating the control and punishment, or is the rhetoric confused and about the subjugated, the victim, the predator, or the abuser? I think what they're talking about is, are there cultural differences here? In which, at some level, we may be imposing what amount to our cultural norms on people who increasingly do come from other parts of the world and other cultures. It's a stumper question. Go ahead, Chris.
I've done some work with the Exodus Refugee Center here in town, and about once every 6 months, I'll go and talk to some of the men there, and it's a great conversation. I do see some of that, but when we start talking about the abuse of women, especially because a lot of them are in heterosexual relationships, everyone seems to understand that. I don't think that it's fair to say that in this culture they beat women, so we just have to accept
that.
We just accept that. I don't think that that's fair. In my experience with the time that I've spent with the refugees here that are assimilating into our culture, they all understand that and are very proud that they would never do something like that.
So we've gotten fairly far into the show here. We probably ought to talk on practical levels here. What are some of the signs for folks who are listening that you are in an abusive relationship? Or at least that your relationship may be moving in that direction.
We just talked about this at lunch, and Chris said it so nicely. I'm going to toss it over to you.
Oh, my gosh. What did I say?
You were talking about – so we had lunch before this, and we were talking about this question in particular, and Chris said it really well of when your relationship starts to move too fast and that they want to check in on you often, it's the subtle little signs that you want to look for. Do you want to take
I think you're refreshing my memory. Thank you. it really is the subtle little signs. It goes from really good to we're spending a lot of time together, and the conversation from what did you do today sort of has a different tone. Who were you with today sort of has a different tone. And then the a little bit of control and jealousy mixed in. So if you decide to go spend time with some friends instead of the person you're in a relationship with, and they get jealous or pouty or shut down or have a negative reaction to you exerting any type of independence, that to me is a really big red flag early on that a lot of people sort of dismiss as, well, they really like me, so they want to spend time with me, and so it's cute, rather than, this is a little bit of a red flag, and it concerns me why they believe they have so much control over my life.
Lindsay, I was going to throw this to you next, in part because a lot of the people you work with have no experience with relationships. I mean, the dealing, and you know, I say this as a parent of teenagers myself. There's a certain fear about on the part of parents about watching them begin to explore that world, and that part of their lives. What are some of the warning signs for those young people, or more to the point, their parents too, who are listening right now? That okay, this may be headed toward being an abusive relationship.
Before I answer that, I just want to point out that young people value these relationships tremendously, and they mean the world to them, and so they really appreciate when people take it seriously. So yes, they don't have much experience in having relationships or dating or love, but it's very serious to them. So as you know, don't just pass it off as, oh, you know, it's young love, you'll find somebody one day, it's okay. Make sure you take it seriously, first of all. Secondly, for young people, the warning signs are pretty much the same. And one way that I describe it to them is when you are in a relationship and you start and you are no longer able to be you. You cannot, you know, do the things that you once loved to do. You don't make it to practice after school. You don't make it to work. You are devoting your life to this other person, and you're not able to follow your dreams, your goals. That's when you know that something's up.
We are talking about domestic violence, domestic abuse, because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. If you'd like to join the conversation, please send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what Steve has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello, Steve. You're on the air.
My question is in regard to helping the victim. I had a company that a small business that I sold, and I got informed by other employees about one of my employees who was being abused, and which is why she wore long sleeves and turtlenecks all the time. And two different times, we would get things lined up for her to leave, including at the second time, as far as getting a moving van hired. We had attorneys, counselors ready for, and both times she was like, she pulled back and said, no, she stopped the process, says, I'm going to try and make it work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had an alcohol problem, but during the day he was fine. He'd even come in the office sometimes friendly, and we'd have to act like we didn't know anything because that's what she wanted. But it was just really a difficult situation.
Let me see if I can get an answer.
And she kept rejecting it.
Steve, let me see if we can get an answer here for you. Thanks very much for calling and for sharing. And I'll say this. Thank you very much for caring for your employee, too.
Yes.
Yeah, so, Steve, that you went well above and beyond what most employers would do, and that brings warmth to my heart.
Yes.
But we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, too, that you can't force someone to leave. So you can give them all the tools and the resources possible and available, but they're going to decide for themselves when is the best time to leave. And, you know, I don't know her, obviously, but she could very well be scared to leave and what the ramifications of her leaving are, because when she's with him, she at least knows what to expect. It could also be that, you know, there are good times. It's not always awful and bad. There are good times where it's fun and romantic and a normal couple. And people want that back. They just want that. And they want the abuse to go away. So there are lots of different reasons as to why someone might stay. If they had children, he could use the children against her. You know, I think a different conversation we need to have as a community is more of, you know, why does he abuse?
Then why does she stay?
Yeah,
well, and I think it's important to realize here, and I normally try to avoid offering, but because I've dealt with this too, it's important to realize that the human heart is not a binary switch here.
Absolutely.
It does not turn on and turn off. Even if someone is abusing you, most likely your feelings about that person are still going to be complicated. And if you had affection, you had love, even if there's betrayal, there's anger, there's resentment, mm-hmm. there's still going to be some of the all of the things that drew you to the relationship in the first place.
when I do a lot of training, I talk about it, and I use the example of someone struggling with substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you love someone who is your child, your brother, sister, parent, spouse, and they are using harsh drugs, and they disappear for days on end, and they have trouble with the criminal justice system, and they need medical attention, that can drain a family, but you never really see that person as being a drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
You see the person that you knew, that you loved, your child, your son, daughter, brother,
he's
sister.
Still dad,
yeah,
or
still dad.
My brother, or
and I think that
Uncle
for people
Felix
who experience abuse, it's the same situation where you don't see them as a big scary monster. You see them as the person you fell in love with. And so to walk away feels like a failure at some point, even though you know rationally you are not failing, that it's their issue that they need to deal with. It can feel that way. And that's hard to take that step.
Steve made a point I think we ought to follow up on here, that it, you know, in terms of identifying those someone who might be enduring domestic abuse, what are some of the physical signs? He mentioned the fact that he was always wearing turtlenecks and long sleeves, even if it was, you know, 90-some degrees outside. Are there other signals that that you should take note of and think, okay, maybe I ought to see if there is something going on there? Lindsay, you made eye contact.
Well, I think in the workplace, you can look at taking long breaks, on the phone a lot, missing work unannounced, sad, maybe crying at work. A personality change is really big. Anytime someone's personality changes, there's something going on. And it's important as friends, as employers, to ask, hey, I noticed this about you. What's going on? I want to help. Tell me, you know. So any, and honestly, it could be anything, but the fact that someone's there to ask is probably the most important.
We've gotten a question from a listener named Molly via Facebook. And again, to find us on Facebook, we're at No Limits, WFYI. It says, could you speak about gaslighting and how that ties into emotional abuse? Chris.
Yeah. So gaslighting is a term that's from the old Ingrid Bergman movie, mm-hmm. where the husband tricks her into believing all of these things that she's done that she hasn't actually done. For instance, hiding someone's keys. So mm-hmm. I knew I put these keys on the table, and I've been looking around the house for an hour for them, and I can't find them. That is gas. And the husband took the keys so that she would go around the house for an hour and believe that she is not mentally stable. Gaslighting occurs when someone is trying to make you believe something that isn't true, especially about your own behavior. So, yeah, I think that's the best way to put it.
We've gotten an email from a listener, for understandable reasons, does not want a name used. I'm not even going to identify gender. What if you have been in this type of relationship for several years? How do you change the dynamics of the relationship?
You cannot change the dynamics of the relationship. There's people out here who will help you. You are not alone. There's lots of resources in our community that are here to help you. You may want to change the dynamics and you want things to get better, but someone who behaves this way, it's their behavior that needs to be mended, that needs to be helped, not you.
And there's nothing you can do to help them because there is no equality of power there.
And it's never your fault.
So I want to step in real quickly because Lindsay mentioned something and the two of you have alluded. There are resources to help
mm-hmm,
you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about accessing those resources? If this person who sent the email wants help, how does this person go about getting it? What's a good first step, Lindsay?
If you're able to use a phone, you can dial 211, and you have to kind of explain your situation, and then they will hook you up with resources in the community. They will give you the numbers that you need. The Julian Center Shelter, downtown Indy at 19th and Meridian, is an amazing resource, and you don't have to go into shelter to use their services. They have outreach advocates that can help you. Their phone number is 317-941-2200.
Go ahead and give that to them again, please.
It's 317-941-2200, and that's for the Julian Center.
I would also be very cautious about using the internet and email to reach out for help, because that is traceable.
Yeah.
And so if your abuser gets online and they can see that, you want to get that help, but you want to do it discreetly.
We are talking about domestic violence and domestic abuse here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Ben, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello, Ben. You're on the air, and we're getting a little tight on time, so I'm going to ask you to be quick.
Okay, I'll be very quick. Yeah, with this being Domestic Abuse Month, it seems that the conversation has been very still steered for men-on-woman domestic abuse, especially when you mentioned the LGBTQ community. I just wanted to bring up that what's your thoughts on women-on-men violence, and also the fact that when they did the census with New York, polling with New York Times, that it's more likely for girls to be domestic abused against guys, especially when it comes to lesbians.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Chris.
Well, I would actually say that I'm sorry, I'm forming my thoughts for a second.
Oh, certainly. So, well, basically,
yeah,
saying,
I would say that it is common. I mean, I think it is men underreport the violence that's perpetrated against them. But I spent a lot of time as an advocate with the Julian Center and worked with IMPD, and I would go to the scene where someone had just experienced violence. And so, and one of the worst scenes I ever pulled up on was where a female had attacked her husband, and it was rough. It does exist, and it is it's something we need to address.
I want to get this last one in. A caller didn't want to go on the air because it's really important. Is there any assistance for a woman who can't leave because there are no shelters in her area or because she is financially dependent on her partner? Is there someone she could call and walk through this problem right now?
So I would refer her to families first. It depends on what county she's in, but her county agency, but Families First, has a pretty great outreach, and their outreach advocates, their number is 634-6341. But they can
is
help
that area
her,
code 317?
Area code 317. They can help her with a safety plan. And then there's also resources available to help her relocate. So if she needs she has family out of town and she can stay with them, we can help her get a bus pass or a first month's deposit or whatnot. But she needs to work with an advocate and get that safety plan in place. So Families First.
Okay, Chris.
And I was going to say, a lot of shelters that I know, if you call into the shelter and say, I live five counties over and there's no shelters, I don't believe they're going to turn you away. They are obligated under their grants to try to find you services.
Well, would they, like, come get her, or if she doesn't even have a way? It sounds like, in her case, she doesn't have the means, and she's really feel trapped.
There's money available for a taxi cab to take her from her house to a shelter. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't have to pay for that.
Okay.
And so an advocate would be able to talk her through her specific situation, so calling Families First or other service agencies like that.
Well, I want to thank all three of you, my guests, Kelly McBride, Lindsay Hill Staywick, and Chris Hanberg, all from the Domestic Violence Network, Indiana's Domestic Violence Network. This is not an easy conversation to have. You've made it, though, much easier than it otherwise would have been. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.